I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Is the safety pin a symbol of security, as a number of Shawnee Mission teachers claim, or is it a badge of political protest against the president-elect? The school board's answer pits teachers' rights to free speech against their obligation to follow district policy. So which action is morally correct? We'll ask the ethics professors that. And with the holidays here, what does that mean for atheists and agnostics caught up in workplace and family celebrations? How should they respond? Then Brian McTavish joins us with the weekend to-do list. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Suddenly, safety pins are all the rage, not as in a fashion statement, but as in a huge controversy in the Shawnee Mission School District. The issue, should teachers and staff be allowed to wear large safety pins as a symbol of support for women, immigrants, people of color, Muslims, the LGBTQ community, and others who have been the target of negative campaign rhetoric? Some members of the community say the answer is yes. The safety pins are a way to express support for marginalized groups. But Superintendent Jim Henson thinks differently. He says the safety pins could be viewed as a political symbol, and that's not allowed. Neither was the hanging of a Confederate flag in a district school, Henson said. He's got to treat all symbols the same. So who's right here? Let's ask the ethics professors to sort it all out for us. And they are Wayne Vaught. He's the dean of the UMKC College of Arts and Sciences. He's also a professor of philosophy, medicine, and bioethics, and he's one of my bosses at UMKC. Wayne, always good to have you.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Clancy Martin is also back. He's a professor in the Department of Philosophy at UMKC and a professor of business ethics at the Block School of Management. Clancy, good morning.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
So once again, a symbol is at the center of attention in one of our major school districts. This time we're talking safety pins, of all things. Wayne, you oversee all those unruly professors at UMKC like me. What if I wore a safety pin to work? Can I do that?
Well, absolutely. You could do that. You'd be supported, I think, in doing that. We haven't had any, and there have been people wearing safety pins on the UMKC campus. The issue really becomes one, obviously, of freedom of speech, freedom of expression.
Sure.
There are certain concerns, I think legitimate concerns, that public institutions would have. And first of all, public institutions like Shawnee Mission School Board, the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as public institutions, have really restricted abilities to suppress another individual's speech rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I certainly value, and I think we as a society ought absolutely hold as a very high standard, is that people have a right to speak on issues that are of public concern and be able to express their positions on these things. Where there is this area of controversy, and I think that the school board and Henson has been looking at, is that where there is both legal and I think you could argue moral legitimate restriction is when there is such a disruption that if speech acts were to cause significant disruption to the operations of an institution, then it has increasing rights to be able to limit or restrict
but
certain
types. But is that going to happen, disruption you're talking about?
I would think that in order to invoke that argument, that there is disruption, there has to be not just sort of some quasi-hypothetical opportunity for where we might possibly see disruption, but some actual real disruption to the function and services. Now, as I understand, just from a newspaper reading about the story in the Shawnee Mission School District, is that there were a number of complaints about the safety pins,
mm-hmm.
And the school board then moved to take action upon those complaints. And didn't prohibit, but I guess is strongly, strongly discouraged its faculty and staff from wearing that, from wearing the safety pin.
And there's a potential here for even stricter rules coming down the pike if teachers aren't listening to the board, I guess.
Oh, I suppose so. And then, of course, those who might wear them anyway could probably fear that there might be repercussions from that, a dismissal or some type of punitive action. And so that would get into obviously some very interesting and complicated legal matters. But what is at issue there also is, and I think the school board had tried to address, is like, well, we can't differentiate a safety pin from a Confederate flag. And I guess there was a Confederate flag flown, or it's reported that there's somebody put up a Confederate flag in a classroom.
Because
after Henson's
saying this is a matter of fairness here. I wouldn't allow a Confederate flag to be hung in a classroom or on a school building. I can't allow the safety pins either.
Well, that's, I think, the position that they're taking. But then you get into all kinds of symbols that students wear, whether they be crosses, whether they be
wristbands,
yeah. Whether they be, you know, the outright, the things to support various sorts of various causes and various individuals. And I think the cross probably being one of the most visible and predominant symbol that's probably worn. And the cross has some very good connotations with it and has some very negative connotations with it. And so one of the challenges I think that the school board has to face is that it's not just sort of what does the individual intend, but what are the recipients receiving in terms of seeing this symbol. And a safety pin has not really had a whole lot. I'm not aware of a whole lot of deep cultural symbolism affiliated with safety pins.
Yeah.
It has really arisen up around, and I don't know I don't actually know the history why this came up to date, other than it has been a sign of sympathy and compassion for the marginalized groups who were just
it's a new thing.
Traumatized.
It's a new phenomenon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
During this election cycle, the whole thing in and of itself was incredibly disturbing, but that you had groups. Whether they be Mexicans, whether they were Islamic, whatever they were, who were directly attacked during this election cycle, and people wanting to stand up and say, you know, this isn't about a candidate or another. It's about people being and not even what the candidates did, but the public response to that cultural environment has brought out the worst of the worst, I think, and what we see, the way people are talking. And I know from reports that what we're seeing in the schools is that children are coming home being traumatized, being told that they're going to be deported,
right.
Being told this and that and the other. And for students to have a sense of, hey, there's someone here who cares about me and someone who's safe. I think those who are wearing the safety pin are actually not trying to create a disruptive environment, but are actually trying to say, hey, no, we want there to be a safe environment where you feel you can come to school and you're not going to be harassed and threatened and traumatized. And so that is really, I think, fundamentally the issue. And I don't know that the school board honestly has enough evidence to support its claim that these safety pins are actually causing such disruptions to the school environment that we can't teach our students. And that would be the issue, I think.
I want to get our listeners involved here because I know there's a lot of feelings. We've already have one call from Nancy here. Nancy, just hang on for a minute. I want to get Clancy Martin to weigh in here a little bit. Our number here, 816-235-2888. How do you feel about this safety pin controversy that's dogging the Shawnee Mission School District right now? 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Clancy, how do you size this thing up? Because, again, just to get everybody on the same page, proponents argue that the safety pins are the symbol of inclusiveness. The superintendent says it's a political symbol and can't be allowed. Your thoughts?
It's an incredibly complex issue that
doesn't
we
seem
are
that
wrestling.
Way in the on the surface.
It doesn't
though, does
on
it?
The surface, and then you recognize that we are wrestling with this at, in particular, in academic environments, and increasingly at all different levels, and from across the political spectrum. So, for example, it's mostly been from the political concerns of marginalized communities that on college campuses in the last year or two, we have seen these demands for safe spaces with the speech of professors, various kinds of speech being constricted for what are called trigger warnings, or professors having to make certain kinds of announcements to their students because of the perceived harm that would be done by a particular kind of speech in the classroom. And I'm not at all surprised to see it appearing now in high schools, and I think it is going to be appearing in high schools more and more, both from what we traditionally describe as the left of the political spectrum and from the right, such that both sides of the political spectrum are trying to control one another's speech. both, whether it's students or faculty or the parents of students, it's really a lot of ways the political issue of our time, because suddenly we are viewing speech not in quite the same way we did for a long time, where the constraint on the First Amendment was really shouting fire, as we all know, in a theater or something where there would be direct harm. We are increasingly recognizing in our society the potency of symbolic speech.
That's
and it started with, you know, certain words that, of course, I would not say on the air that have become to be seen as hateful speech that do direct harm to a particular, generally speaking, underrepresented member of society. And we're saying this word is prohibited and that word is prohibited. Now, it does seem like at least it's fair game to be having the debate about whether increasingly symbolic speech, such as a safety pin, such as someone wearing a swastika into a classroom or wearing a Confederate flag into a classroom or wearing a t-shirt that had a particularly offensive word, what we consider offensive word into the classroom. It seems like it's a very healthy debate for us to be having. Now, I entirely agree with Wayne that in this particular instance of the safety pin, it's a hard case for the school board to make or for any representative of the school to make that the safety pin is political and harmful in the way that some other examples that come to mind are. But nevertheless, I'm glad we're having the debate because we really don't know as a society right now quite what we think about the First Amendment, particularly in classrooms.
Richard emailed us this, just to piggyback on what you're saying here, Clancy. He wrote, in part, just wanted to share why I wear and have worn a safety pin for many years. The pins are a psychological device to remind me of how I want to act to others. This has nothing to do, he writes, with religion or politics, but rather a philosophical approach to life. I do not wear the pins in a conspicuous spot. I do, however, wear them where someone who is observant can see them. Interesting thoughts from
And very interesting that he goes out of his way to say not in a conspicuous spot, because immediately what that tells us is that he's recognizing of the impact they can have on viewers.
I wasn't aware this was an older, a long-standing symbol. I thought this was something fresh here. Let's go to some calls. We have a full board. Imagine that. Nancy from Overland Park, welcome to Up to Date. We're talking about the safety pin controversy in the Shawnee Mission School District. Good morning.
Hi. Wayne had already touched on it, saying that safety pins sort of exist as a signal to school kids that this is a person you can talk to. My kids are in grade school down in Overland Park in the Blue Valley District, and all over the schools are posters about bullying and pictures of happy teachers holding signs saying, you can talk to me about bullying. So the climate that we're in right now, where one kid is taunting another child that they're going to get deported, I think the safety pin is just that little sign saying, you can talk to me if you're being bullied. And I think it's absolutely ludicrous to equate a safety pin with a swastika or a Confederate flag, which have documented associations with violence. I mean, it's a safety pin. Its biggest association is like diapers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I got you. Nancy, thanks for the good call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Joe from Lenexa. Joe, you're on Up to Date.
Hi.
Hi.
On the news, there's also, I'm not sure it was a superintendent or an aide, saying that it wasn't just the safety pins, it was that those that were wearing them were trying to get other teachers to also wear them, and that was crossing the line between basically supporting a cause or trying to convert or evangelize it. And that's why they took action, basically telling teachers, if you don't wear it, well, then you're the opposite. You're for marginalizing, when there's a lot of teachers just don't want to get involved. They're just neutral to the entire thing. They want to focus on schoolwork.
Okay. Joe, thank you very much. I'm wondering about our first caller's, you know, comment about comparing the safety pin to the Confederate flag. Does that make sense to the two of you? Because, again, the argument from some here is that the Confederate flag, you know, is a symbol of hate, while others are saying the safety pin is a symbol of love and inclusiveness. are they equal? Do they hold equal weight here? Are they both political symbols? Or, again, Richard wrote us and said his isn't political at all.
Well, it's cultural, it's historical, and there are so many factors that are involved. And the Confederate flag brings with it a lot of tradition, a lot of history, a lot of negativity in particular. But if you ask people, particularly people in the South, I suppose, who fly the Confederate flag or have the Confederate flag, they will probably tell you, oh, this isn't about hate or this isn't about whatever. This is about my culture. It's about my identity of my family. And this isn't about any racial issues. It's just sort of this sort of thing. But for most, flying the Confederate flag, which was, you know, a controversy several years ago over state houses, which we've successfully, I believe, taken those all down. They're not flying.
In
South Carolina, took theirs down. You've seen symbols of statues now being removed from public sites and placed in different places because they commemorate individuals. That is a symbol, certainly, and on university campuses, Harvard has certainly been dealing with this and the names on buildings. And so the issue of symbol in and of itself is just a really complex and fascinating issue. Even the swastika is a cross that goes back and has history certainly before the Third Reich. And so what cultural events attach themselves to symbols and become, then the symbol becomes representative of that culture's experience of that symbol, is going to carry a lot of weight. So with the Confederate flag, we have very strong reason for wanting to remove it from public venues because it is for many a sign of oppressiveness. In a way that the safety pin, at least for me, it just doesn't seem, I don't know, I'm so unfamiliar, I guess, with it, though the caller, as you said, this has been a movement that's been going on for some time, I don't believe brings all of those cultural artifacts with it. So it makes it more difficult, I think, for the school board to say, well, the safety pin is about some political statement in a way that a swastika or in a way that a Confederate flag, I think,
so
can
the board
more
is
clearly
taking,
be identified.
Taking maybe a simpler way out, which is to say that we're not going to allow any political symbol at all in our school buildings.
Select, because I imagine they still allow crosses. And so, again, if you're going to go to the full measure
that's
of
that's not
saying,
a political symbol, though, is it?
It could be, I suppose.
I suppose it could be, yeah.
It's certainly with the issue that the caller brought up about indoctrinating someone wearing a cross, why are you wearing a cross? Oh, well, let me tell you about my religious beliefs. It seems to, if somebody's wearing a safety pin, why are you wearing the safety pin? Well, I'm wearing it because of this, and you should do it as well to form some solidarity with students. It comes back to, you know, Clancy's point earlier, and this really is just this, I think we're in the decade of free speech. That's what's going to be at issue for us for at least the next 10 years.
That's interesting.
And I think it's because the way that speech comes out, the way Trump in particular is now bypassing traditional media, which was this sort of the traditional way in which freedom of speech in the press was the protector of free speech. And I think that institution is now under serious threat as being the guardian of free speech. And
Tell
there are all these
it.
Other yeah. venues which people can make speech, which goes unchecked. And you're like, well, what is free speech and responsible speech? And how do you provide these checks and balances and protect individuals? We are just really in for, I think, a very interesting decade or so.
Why can't this stuff be simpler? That's what I want to know. We're talking about safety pins, for goodness sakes. Okay, Hannah from Overland Park. Hannah, thanks for holding for us.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to say that the safety pin in and of itself is not political at all, and it wasn't political in any way until the Shawnee Mission School Board made it political.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about any symbol is it is very much the case that they become political when they provoke reactions from other people.
It's in the eye of the beholder.
Different symbols mean different things to
different
people.
Yeah.
As Wayne was pointing out with the Confederate flag, what you see as a symbol of inclusiveness, I may very well experience as a symbol of exclusiveness, of being put out.
Or you're going against Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, that's right. In the narrow example, you're making a speech against the person who I feel like is the legitimate president of the United States, or coming president of the United States. And furthermore, most every symbol starts out as innocuous. You know, it's
acquires its history, it acquires its baggage as it acquires popularity. And finally, we should remember that it's different for an individual to represent a particular symbol or wear a cross than it is for someone who is working for a public organization to wear a symbol or to wear a cross. So I might feel a little bit nervous going to the classroom myself as a professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, wearing a very bold cross or any other religious symbol for the simple reason that I'm cautious about trying to impose my particular views on my students. And whereas I wouldn't be nervous about one of my students wearing a cross.
That's interesting. Let's do this. It's I'm overdue for a break, so let's take one right now. Deborah, Christopher, Liz, hang on for me. Don't go anywhere. We'll get your phone calls after a break here, and we'll continue our very good conversation about the symbolism of the safety pin that's plaguing the Shawnee Mission School District right now. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Former Senator and diplomat George Mitchell proposed a path to peace in the Middle East on yesterday's program. We also learned the perils of relying too much on big data. Find those conversations online at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow we get a visit from our Johnson County librarian friends with book recommendations for the kiddos just in time for holiday gift giving. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, this hour we're talking about safety pins in the Shawnee Mission School District. Our ethics professors are in the house, two professors from UMKC, Wayne Vaugh and Clancy Martin. Lots of folks been waiting patiently to weigh in on this interesting issue. Liz from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning, Liz.
Hey, how are you guys?
Well, thanks, Liz. Thanks for holding on.
Sure, no problem. It's a great discussion, so it's very worth listening to and participating in. I'm actually an educator, and I kind of feel that school often mirrors and reflects what's going on in society. And I see this whole thing of wearing safety pins in the school as a great teachable moment. I mean, I see it as an opportunity to have a discussion and teach our kids how to differentiate the spectrum of issues that we're dealing with.
And why is that so important, do you think?
Well, because I think if they don't learn it at a time before they end up in college, when it becomes maybe a bigger deal, or when they are adults and are in the workplace, I think they kind of have the tools and knowledge to deal with it in a better manner if they start incorporating it or actually learning it kind of earlier in life.
Okay. Liz, I'm glad you called. Thank you. Let's go to Christopher from Miriam on the Kansas side. Christopher, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, this issue is one that I've been dealing a lot with. I've lived in Europe for quite a while, and especially in countries like Austria where, you know, it's banned to be a Nazi party, and so that discussion of free speech and what are you even allowed to believe comes up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know how to fall in it. You know, I grew up in the States, was 100% free speech, everything's allowed, and now having kind of seen more of that history, I do have some understanding for saying, hey, some things go too far, but I don't know where you draw those lines. And when things that I would say go too far are now being elected president, obviously it's a whole different discussion. But I think for me, the issue is in the schools, if we say everything that's political is suddenly disallowed, well, life is political. And like you said, you know, some people want to wear a sign that says I'm fighting cancer. If that becomes a political issue, we should no longer fight cancer. I mean, where do you draw the line? You can't fully separate life from politics.
That's
so
interesting.
I don't know where I fall on this issue, but I think that it's important to realize that politics can't just 100% be separated from life. And it's one thing if I think minimum wage should go up 30 cents or down 30 cents, but it's another thing if I think certain groups should not be allowed to have their rights in this country, and I'm saying I think they should.
Okay.
I don't know where I fall, but
yeah,
that's my thoughts.
Christopher, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let me go to Deborah from Lenexa. Deborah, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
My comment is that Jim Henson and the school board are well aware that there isn't an equivalence between the Confederate flag and safety pins because, as they say, they are willing to require a staff member to take down a Confederate flag from a classroom. They have not, and they are not willing, apparently, to require the teachers to take off safety pins or to discipline them. Henson specifically said that teachers who wear safety pins will not face disciplinary action. If they did indeed believe that there was an equivalence between the two, they would have no hesitation about requiring people to take off the safety pins, and this suggests that their strong request that people not wear them says more about Pinson and the school board wanting to send a political message to people. That's my comment.
And that message would be what, do you think?
To show, as he said, that they have, he said, we have complaints about, from people where, we have complaints, received complaints about people wearing safety pins. He wants to show those people who are complaining, hey, yeah, we agree with you.
Okay.
But we're not willing to put our legal aces on the line to fight for it. But we agree with you, and we agree with people that complain about it, but we don't think that legally
right.
we can do anything about it.
Okay, Deborah, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Susan from Mission. Susan, you're on the air.
Interesting that I fell into the queue where I did, because I called with different comments, but listening to the woman prior to me, I have to point out that the KNEA, you know, they worked in conjunction with the school board to craft their statement that is
That's right.
so controversial. And they sent out a press release just on November 22nd that stated that they had to advise members of their rights and responsibilities when circumstances which could threaten employment arise. They also said that the joint statement was intended to advise members to comply with district requests in order to avoid potentially harmful job actions. Okay, that's pretty ominous language. And not until after the school board meeting this week did Hinson, in news coverage, say that there wouldn't be disciplinary action. So I just really, you know what, I'm wearing a safety pin today, and it's dedicated to those teachers who have been marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly the fallout here. And my other comment was, you know, I believe that disruption, and there was a man early on who pointed this out and was kind of blown off, frankly. But he was saying that, you know, the disruption was the evangelizing that was going on between a small group of teachers pressuring other teachers. Hinson himself has commented on that. And I'm just kind of really flabbergasted by this unilateral policy making because a small group is acting inappropriately. I mean, deal with your employees effectively. Don't just baby out with the bathwater.
Right, right.
I don't get this, like, patriarchal, totalitarian policy making.
Gotcha.
And especially when you're hearing a public outcry and they just sit there with their arms folded in their privilege and their paranoia and do nothing.
All right, Susan, I'm going to let you go there. Thank you very much for the comments. Gentlemen?
Well, that was phenomenal. Thank you for calling in. Those are very good, I think, and very pointed comments on a variety of issues that are quite relevant. You know, several of the callers have made, I think, a number of really good suggestions about this, particularly about the teaching moment. And, mm-hmm. you know, what has happened. But now the school board really, I think, does have to take a serious look at what it's done and how they can move forward. Because one of the things that schools should be doing, and this goes back to John Dewey, and I think Dewey's conception in terms of a philosophy of education, was that schools are to prepare people for living in democracies. There are many democracies in teaching people how to live in those worlds. And here we have sort of a prime opportunity. And I think that's what some of the callers have said, is that the school board could use this as a moment. We have the posters up on walls about bullying, about the harmful speech and everything. And then we have this situation that arises, and it's as if the board wants, well, let's push this aside. And it seems to me potentially to send a message to those whom these teachers are trying to support, is that, well, the school board doesn't want to have that type of mm-hmm. message coming to the students, which I think in and of itself is terribly, terribly frightening to those who have been marginalized. So it seems that there needs to now be some opportunity to use this as a chance for conversation, for actual support of the marginalized groups, and for re-engaging the teachers that want to step out in a way that they are. And I absolutely agree agree with the caller that you don't and should not. It's sort of one of the traditional beliefs, I think, even the law and otherwise. You don't establish policy because of a few bad instances, because then what you do is you create bad policy that penalizes people who are acting appropriately. Yeah. So if there were just some groups or pockets of people doing things that they shouldn't do, whether it's proselytizing or whatever, address that. Address the specific harmful behavior that you're actually dealing with and not try to do this, well, we're going to ban safety pins because there are a lot of good people trying to reach out to our students. And I absolutely agree with the caller that that has been a real failing in the policy that as it has so far developed.
Clancy Martin.
Two other quick things. One is, I think that we should recognize that there are professional ethical responsibilities for the persons absolutely who are making these policies, and they need to be thoughtful and respectful of the roles of the teachers as educators when they're thinking about policy. And hopefully no enduring policies are going to emerge from a narrow-minded approach to this particular topic. There are also professional ethical responsibilities for the teachers. Mm-hmm. And we should be particularly careful particularly as teachers of young, impressionable people, to be very thoughtful about the way in which we introduce any form of speech into our classroom and providing mm-hmm. context for that speech and explaining what we're doing, why we're doing it, and why this particular means of doing it is appropriate. Furthermore, when we're talking about introducing smart conversations into our classrooms or smart conversations into our democracy, we should always recognize that just as people may have prejudices in favor of certain kinds of symbols that we find repellent, we can have prejudices in all kinds of things which make our beliefs less intelligent than they might be. So I am a great advocate of the First Amendment, but I have to recognize that my knee-jerk defense of the First Amendment and saying free speech, free speech, free speech is a particular prejudice of mine.
Right.
And I have to be willing to engage in these mm-hmm. debates and ask myself, is it always the case that free speech should trump some other value, should be more important than some other value that might be importantly under consideration in the particular ethical conflict?
Denny wrote, in part, it is responsibility of the administration and teachers to find a way to make a statement that any student can feel free to approach any teacher for protection. To that end, why not call a school assembly to send this message and provide examples of behavior that are not acceptable? Why not bring the students and teachers together in the same inclusive, respectful message? Okay, so let's go to another phone call here. Sarah from Lee Summit. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to really briefly address the history. So it did come. It does have a political root.
The safety pin you're talking about, right?
Yes, but always in the form of solidarity. So it actually started in World War II in Norway with wearing a paperclip on the lapel for the Norwegian resistance during Nazi occupation.
Ah.
And then it was picked up again in Sydney when there was a terrorist attack on a cafe. Then a number of Muslims were killed, and they brought the safety pin out then at that point to express solidarity. Then it came up in Brexit for solidarity for it predominantly started with the Polish that were really getting attacked post-Brexit. And that's when it was raised again during this campaign. So, I mean, I understand the attachment of a political meaning to
right.
it, but it's always been from the perspective of solidarity. So that does come to the question of which is more valuable, you know, the expression of compassion and inclusion versus it as
right.
a putative political symbol.
I appreciate the history there. That was interesting. I want to thank our ethics professors there. We're out of time on this topic. Who knew that safety pins could generate so much conversation? Wayne Vaught, the dean of the UMKC College of Arts and Sciences. Clancy Martin, a professor in the Department of Philosophy at UMKC. Gentlemen, thanks very much. Happy holidays to both of you.
It was a pleasure, and you as well.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Okay. Coming up, Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list.
You can rely on me.
Isn't that a nice way to begin our time together here this week? Brian McTavish is here talking about cool stuff to do this weekend.
Yeah.
How are you? Welcome back.
Well, here's a cool thing to do.
Yes.
Go check out the Heartland Men's Chorus.
Yes.
They're going to be celebrating their special Kansas City Christmas. They're going to get, according to them, classy, brassy, and let's not forget sassy.
Ah. With Judy Garland and a whole bunch more.
Yes, Judy can't make it, but they're going to be doing, among other things, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, that classic Judy Garland ditty from Meet Me in St. Louis, Once Upon a Time, Long Ago and Far Away. Heartland Men's Chorus will be performing its Casey Christmas show at 8 o'clock Saturday night, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. That's at the Folly Theater. Hey, keep this in mind. They're actually branching out this year to Johnson County. So even if you can make it to see these wonderful fellas, Kansas City's Gay Men's Chorus, doing its wonderful thing at the Folly, check them out Saturday, December 10, at Johnson County Community College.
Options galore.
As well. And sure, they're going to have, like, the first half of the show is very serious, or, you know, solemn, appropriately so, Christmas and all. And then the second half just gets kind of crazy. Including a zany fruitcake song of some sort. Well, I don't know if it will be an ode to fruitcake or a warning against fruitcake. Do you like fruitcake?
But we'll find out, because they'll be here next Wednesday. We're going to have a conversation about it.
You got to get the fruitcake questions in, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I think I recognize this one.
Yeah, it's that time of year again.
That time of year.
It's the Kansas City Ballet's very wonderful. Wonderful's the word for today. It's that season, you know. It's the Nutcracker.
Yes.
It's the Christmastime classic, the music of Tchaikovsky, and the choreography.
Let's crack some nuts.
Ooh, let's do that. Let's do that. And you know who's going to help us do that in more ways than one, including the life-size Nutcracker on stage. When the Nutcracker opens at 2 and 7:30 Saturday and 1 and 5 Sunday at the Kauffman Center, who's going to help us do that is Devin Carney. He's the ballet's artistic director. Last year, he unveiled a brand new version of the KC Ballet's Nutcracker, including all new choreography, which he was totally responsible for, and more kids than ever on stage. You know, these kids play double roles, and or they have like two or three kids, I should say, maybe playing individual roles. So all the kids get a chance, and they're all being educated and trained by
Why
the ballet.
Can't this be simple?
I heard you use that phrase on the way in.
Everything's complicated.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to give more chances for more youngsters to express their seasonal side, you know.
Okay. So that's coming up this weekend.
Absolutely. Lots of dancers on stage, lots of fun.
Be sure to see Brian's 6 things to do in Kansas City this weekend. Just go to kcur.org.
In this room where shadows live and ghosts that fail, no time forgives. Welcome, friends, please stay. Our story starts with one small child who spends this night in Abbott's.
It's kind of a theme to this show. There's a theme developing here about holiday and celebrating.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
You know, that sounds a little like, it's certainly not, but doesn't that sound just a little like Cat Stevens in his prime?
That's a very
interesting,
good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, this is part of Ghosts of Christmas Eve. It's the Trans-Siberian Orchestra's current tour. They present this seasonal rock opera every year. It's got the pyrotechnics, the lights, the lasers, the heavy metal holiday cheer. Now, this is not heavy metal that we're listening to right now. It's part of the show. But it's sort of progressive metal, meaning it gets real quiet, right? And then it gets really loud and crazy. Performances at 3:30 and 8 o'clock Saturday at the Sprint Center. The creator of Trans-Siberian Orchestra is none other than Paul O'Neill, and he was inspired by what rock opera did he see performed in the late 1960s that made him think, I can do this?
Tommy.
You got it,
you
rock and roll expert, you.
Yes,
I wish I'd seen the Who do, Tommy.
Yes.
Anyway, you can see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra do its holiday thing at the Sprint Center on Saturday.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks, you say sit down, it's just talk. He smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of window to your right. As he goes left and you stay right between.
And who's this?
Oh, that's The Fray, performing its best-known song, How to Save a Life. The Fray will be headlining Rock the Red Kettle Concert. That's a benefit concert for the Salvation Army. Besides The Fray, you have opening act David Cook, who won American Idol in 2008, and he came from Blue Springs to do that. 6:30 Friday, KC Live Stage at KCPNL downtown.
All right. You know, I know a tuba when I hear one.
Is it?
And that's a whole bunch of them.
Is it Christmas
it's
yet?
It's a tuba rampage.
Ooh, well, it could be. I think a rampage is part of the fun at Tuba Christmas 2016.
I love the concept.
Calling
I like it.
Well, all the tuba players and the euphonium players who cough up $10, they can participate. It's noon Friday at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. I should get this in, too. If you can't make it, or even if you can make it at noon Friday at the Kauffman Center, you can do it again at noon on Monday, December 12. This happens all around the world in December. 2016 is the 43rd anniversary of Tuba Christmas. It's really cool, man. It's really cool.
You know, and now something very special, a weekend to-do list extra.
Ooh.
What's going on here, Hoss?
Well, we have a weekend to-do list bonus, and we just happen to have the absolutely correct person to tell us about
here,
Mr. Chuck Haddix, ladies and gentlemen.
Chuck, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Steve. You're to be here with you.
Always good to have you here, Chuck. You know that. What are we hearing here, and why are we hearing them?
This is the Funky Butt Brass Band doing Palm Court Strut.
The Funky Butt Brass Band.
That's correct.
Don't you know?
Named
okay.
after, taken from...
I was afraid to ask.
Song by Jelly Roll Morton about the legendary Buddy Bolden.
Oh.
Where it says, funky butt, take it away. There's also the Funky Butt Dance Hall in New Orleans. And the Funky Butt Brass Band hails out of, I love saying that on the radio, hails out of St. Louis, but they play the New Orleans style, and they do this wonderful Christmas show, and we're bringing it to Knuckleheads.
Only you would
this
know all
Sunday,
this, by the way. Yeah.
And this Sunday, and they're going to be doing their Christmas show at Knuckleheads on a double bill with Victor and Penny. And they do things like shiny Christmas balls, something a little risque. At times they sound like James Brown. They play the traditional New Orleans. It's a very versatile group, and they a very theatrical performance of this. And, of course, rounding it out with the swing of Victor and Penny, it's going to be a musical mashup. And that door's open at 6. The show starts at 6:30 and goes until 10 o'clock at Knuckleheads.
We have something here from Victor and Penny here, too, right?
That's correct.
Okay, let's take a listen to Victor and Penny.
No need to get up. Oh, there's mud in my cup. I'm staying in bed till all the papers get read. Day off boogie with you. I'm still in my socks. Oh, I'm neglecting the clock. I'm messing around in my dressing gown. Day off boogie with you. Brewing a pot, sturdy. Oh, if it's sugar you want, honey, that's what
I've
got.
Right. I'll take a shot,
ready or not. Oh, this bag of bones just wants to stay home.
Why do you know?
Oh, man, I hope it keeps on snowing. The dishes can stay
all day.
Oh, right where they lay.
Till we put them away.
And that laundry pile will have to wait a while.
Day off boogie with you.
That's Victor and Penny performing on Sunday evening with the Funky Butt Brass Band at Knucklehead Saloon, 6:30 p.m. Doors open at 6 o'clock. It's a benefit for KCUR. Tell us about Victor and Penny, Chuck.
Well, Victor and Penny are one of Kansas City's leading artists
yes,
these days. They're
absolutely.
Touring nationally, internationally, and breaking out. And it's a throwback group that has a great sense of humor. And, you know, they've got a clarinetist in the band. Penny plays ukulele, and Victor plays some mean guitar. Mm. There's a good humor about their music, but also they have a virtuosity, and they've become one of Kansas City's leading bands, and we're really happy to have them there. You know, I've been doing the Fish Fry for 30 years, and Fish Fry Christmas programs is one of the most popular.
I can imagine.
And fearless leader number one around here, Nico Leone, had said, "What do you think about bringing the Funky Butt Brass Band in?" I said, "I'm aboard."
No, you can't go wrong with that. Yeah. Brian, weigh in here. What do you think of all this?
I love Victor and Penny.
Do you?
Are they going to do any Beatles?
You know, I'll put that in as a request.
Yeah, how about a little Day in the Life, maybe?
That would be a nice one to do.
I'm going
to
slide in a little thing. Sugar Plum Fairy, right, is part of the Nutcracker, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a Sugar Plum Fairy reference in the very beginning of A Day in the Life, that Beatles tune that is on Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, Beatles, Sugar Plum Fairy. It's Lennon singing Sugar Plum Fairy, Sugar Plum Fairy. And
there you go.
Kick into A Day in the Life.
You can be out working the crowd on Sunday night?
I'll be there Sunday night, so will Terry Mack, and we'll have a lot of good friends there and celebrating Christmas at Knuckleheads with Victor and Penny and the Funky Butt Brass Band.
Funky
Butt, 6 o'clock Sunday night. Chuck Haddock's always good to have you here. Brian McTavish, thanks a lot, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
You bet. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, our Johnson County librarian friends bring us their top picks for kids of all ages, just in time for some cozy winter break reading. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, Ryan Hennessy, and Corinne Dorian. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.
Shake your butt, do the palm court strut. Shake your butt, shake it to the left, shake it to the right, shake it with the one that you love tonight. Shake that butt.